Right, we're starting at the top of Chavava Amud Aleph. The Mishnah that we just read was discussing about the difference between a Kotel Chadash and a Kotel Yashan, whether it's a new wall or a older wall. So the Mishnah says, by a new wall, Mechetzio Vilachutz Shelo, that anything that is from the halfway point out towards the Rishut HaRabim you can keep. Mechetzio Lufnim Shel Balabait, whatever is halfway point and inward, it was probably mutzna, it was probably placed in there by the people inside of the house, or on the inside. So Amar Ravashi, Sakina Batar Kata, Bekitza Batar Shantze. So when it comes to a knife, you go after the handle. Meaning that whoever placed the knife in there, you only hold the knife one way. You don't hold the knife by its blade, you hold the knife by its handle. Since you hold the knife by its handle, whichever way the handle is pointing is the likely side that it was placed in from. So if the handle is towards the inside, it's likely the person on the inside put it in. If the handle is on the outside, then facing the outside, then it's likely the person outside placed the sakin in. So irrespective of how deep or how far it's in, it has to do with the placement of the knife. Same thing true as a kisa barta shanse. Same thing is true of a wallet or money bag that goes after its knots, right after the tie, wherever it's placed in, meaning that the person who's holding it holds it by its top, not by the bottom of the money bag, but the top or where it's tied, it's knotted, and they place it in. So whichever way or direction it's facing, that's the likely direction in which it came from. So what are you going to do with our Mishnah? Our Mishnah suggests that it has to do not with the placement of the object, but the location of the object. Let's just look and see whether the handle of the knife is facing to the inside or facing to the outside. Whether the knots or the tie is towards the inside or towards the outside. I mean, that what do you have to know about placement or location? It all has to do with it has to do with the direction in which the object is facing, nothing to do with the placement in the wall. Somebody says, no. Our Mishnah is a case of Udra and Naska. What's Udra? Which says a Muchin, which is wool, pieces of soft wool that's shearings that are in the wall. Naska is raw silver, right? It's some sort of metal. Here where there's no reason to believe, or this metal where there's no reason to believe that a person would hold it one way or the other. Since these aren't objects of shimush, these aren't objects of utility or that people use, therefore they're just their placement, right, or how they're placed in is not really relevant. It has to do with their location within the wall. Right, now, Tano, im haya kotel mumula mehen chukim. If the wall is filled entirely with them, then they split them. Meaning that if there's any chayfetz, right, that takes up the entire wall, I don't know, for instance, let's say shearings here, a mukin over here that he places in, if the shearings span the entire width of the wall, right, then they split it. Meaning that you look at the halfway point on the wall, the halfway point on the wall, we split it in half. Right, it says pshita. I mean, what other suggestion do you have over here? That if it spreads across the whole wall, why wouldn't you be chaleit? Meaning, why would our Mishnah not have application over here? I mean, that you go to the halfway point, and look, whatever's halfway out is the Rishut HaRabim, halfway in belongs to the Baal HaBayit. It says, lo tzricha d'mishupa b'chad gisa, that the wall is leaning or tilted to one direction. So, ma d'teima ishtafukha ishtafuch, I would have thought maybe they were placed from one side, and because of the grade of the wall, they rolled or they moved to the other side. Kamash b'lan, that we don't think in those terms. So despite the fact that the wall is not necessarily straight or flat, it's tilted towards one direction, whether it's the inside or the outside, we don't because that suspect that the object moved from one side to the other, but rather we look at the objects where they're found now, and we say that the placement in which they're found now is likely the placement in which they were originally made or entered. Right now, the last piece in the Mishnah, which is a somewhat cryptic statement, is imaya maskiro d'achirim. If he rents out the house to others, afilu b'toch habayit, right? Even inside the house, hariel shlo, they're his. Right. So the question is, who's inside the bayit and who is hariel shlo? Who do they belong to now? So Mar says, why should it be his? Bamai lezel b'tor b'atro. Let's go after whoever was there last. I mean, let's assume whatever object is found in the house or found in the walls of the house was likely placed there by the last people that lived there. Now, here happens to be a machlokas Rashi and Tosfos who the Batra is over here. When we say Azal Batra Batra, who is this Batra? So Rashi thinks that the Batra is the last person to rent the house. Right? The last renter in the house, why don't we assume that they're the ones who left it there and the object should belong to them? Another Tosfos thinks that Azal Batra Batra is the Balabayit himself, the owner, the landlord of the house. Because the landlord is always the Batra, he's always the one who is in there last, he's always the one that's living there, more or less. And there because of that, he's the one who's considered the Batra. We'll see that as the Gemara develops, they'll have to maneuver to deal with each of their explanations. So Gemara says, Milo Tanan, why? Of course we should go after the last one. Why? Because we have a Mishnah. What does the Mishnah say? Ma'ot shenimtzu lifnei sochrei behema. That money in Yerushalayim that is found in front of the animal merchants, basically the animals that are oil karbanot, or karbanot shalamim, those merchants, if money is found before them, meaning that in front of their tables, out towards where the customers or buyers would come from, the olam ma'aser, we always assume that that money is ma'aser sheni, because we assume that rov basar hanechal b'Yerushalayim is ma'aser sheni. The optimal usage of the monies of Ma'aser Sheni is to purchase with them Karbanot Shlamim. So we assume that the money, the most animals that are found, the money that's found in Yerushalayim has to do with Ma'aser Sheni. If a person cannot expend the money when they're in Yerushalayim, then they'll give the money either to the poor people there, Olavav, to his loved ones, Yerushalayim. And most people, when they have money from Ma'aser Sheni, they're going to use it to spend on Shlamim. Therefore, you can assume that money that is dropped in front of the merchants, the animal merchants, that money likely was Ma'aser Sheni money. Alright? Baharabayit, on the other hand, if there's money found on Harabayit, Chulin. There we say it's Chulin. Even, we're going to see in a second, there's a differentiation between Regel and Shari Mot Hashana. Now, Harabayit, in general, right, is used all year round. If it's used all year round, Rove of the Year, it is classified as non-regal. Since Rove of the Year is classified as non-regal, we're going to assume whatever money that fell there probably fell not during the regal. And if it fell not during the regal, then we can assume that the money that's there is money of Chulin. Because as opposed to the money that's found in front of the Sochrei Behemah, where the likelihood is there was Ma'aser Sheni money being used to purchase the Behemot over here, this could be any money. In that, being on Harabayit, it's not necessarily that the money was for Ma'aser Sheni used to purchase something. It could be any money. So if you look at money ba'alma, plus you look at all year round, the likelihood is the money that's found on Harabayit is chulin. Shalayim b'shar yimot hashana. In Yerushalayim, the rest of the year, chulin. Any other days of the year, we consider it chulin. B'shat ha-regel, akol ma'aser. During the regel, we assume that money found in the streets of Yerushalayim is ma'aser. Now we have to distinguish or understand the distinction between why is it that when it comes to Yerushalayim, it has a different din than Harabayit. Rav Shemaya bar Zira, my time, what's the reason? That they used to sweep the streets of Yerushalayim every day. They used to sweep the Shukei Yerushalayim every day. That means that we assume whatever that was there the day before has been found and removed already. So each day stands on its own independently. Alma, because of that we say, Aminin kamai kamai azlu, whatever was there already is gone. Bahane achrininu, and these are new coins. Meaning that in the Shukei Yerushalayim, or in Yerushalayim itself, where they clean it every day, right, where they have, till today they have the minog, right, that they bring around the machines, they clean the sidewalks, the streets every night. So when they clean up the streets of Yerushalayim, they keep up the Shukei Yerushalayim, the assumption is that whatever is there is gone. So if that's the case, then we look at each day. When you're talking about the rest of the year, okay, rogue money that's found in Yerushalayim, that money is chulin money. So if I find coins during the rest of the year, we can assume on each given day that if a coin fell on that day, it's chulin. On the other hand, during the regel, the rogue of money that's found up there is Ma'aser Sheni money, because everybody is coming in to bring up their karbanot, to bring up their Ma'aser Sheni. Right. Well, we're assuming Ma'aser Sheni, because otherwise, why would you have the money up in Yerushalayim? It's only necessary to bring your Ma'aser Sheni money up to Yerushalayim. You could eat bakvulin. Right. It's not necessary to bring it up there. All right. So now the money that's found on the Shuk Yerushalayim b'shata regel, we assume that that money fell today. If it fell today, because if it fell yesterday, it's already gone. It's been washed up. So if it fell today, then it's likely that it's Master Sheni money. So we look at each day independent. We go bat or batro, because we assume whatever was there beforehand is gone. And what is here now is presently fell, as opposed to on Har HaBayit. On Har HaBayit, they did not sweep Har HaBayit every day. Right? There are two reasons why. One reason is more well known. That's that the Har HaBayit was on a slope or on a slant, and the wind used to clean Har HaBayit. The wind used to blow across Har HaBayit and used to clean off Har HaBayit, so it wasn't necessary to sweep it each day. Since it wasn't necessary to sweep it each day, the question as to what coin fell here has to be looked in a broader perspective or a broader context, not just on the day that it fell or found, that it's found, but of the whole year. Because this coin could have been there for a longer period of time, because we're not certain that it would have been picked up. It was dropped a day or a week ago or a month ago. Now, Rashi brings another possibility. Is that when you go on to Har HaBayit, right? When you go on to Har HaBayit, you're not allowed to wear shoes, right? Har HaBayit is one of the places where you have to go on. It says, "Ain tzarich leitkabei b'chol yom she'ain tit v'achar kol eitz sham." Right? There's no cement and dirt that collects there. Why? Because Rashi gives two reasons. Tov shu meshupa, because it's on a slant. V'od she'ain adam nichnas sham b'mna'al u'b'avak shal raglav. People don't go in there with shoes and with dust on their feet. And that you have the proper way to enter a makom kadosh into a place is to wash off your feet, take off your shoes, and then you walk there. So people already were not dragging in dirt or other problems with their shoes because they were taking them off before they entered, before they went out to Har HaBayit. Now, the question that Tosfos raises is, well, Rashi points out one thing, but there are three things you're not allowed to go on to Har HaBayit. The three things that you're not allowed to enter into the Makom Kadosh with. What are those three things? Right, you can't have, right, it's the Mishnah at the end of Brachot, the last paragraph of Brachot. There are three things you can't bring in. One of them is Naim Arvavav, you can't have shoes on your feet. The other two things are
Maklo.
Right, Maklo, you can't have something that you rest on. And the third thing is, right, Ezor B'matnav, right, you can't have a money belt around your waist. So it just says, what money are we finding on Har HaBayit? Can't bring money up to Har HaBayit. So you can't bring money up to Har HaBayit. You can't bring your wallet. Can't even bring your money belt up to Har HaBayit. Why are we finding any money on Har HaBayit? And then, if you do find money on Har HaBayit, why don't we just assume that it's Hekdesh money? I mean, that any money that's found there belongs to Hekdesh because they're the only ones trafficking in money made up on the Har HaBayit. So does this suggest over here that the fact that you cannot bring up a belt or a money belt onto Har HaBayit is because it looks like it's derech schora. That's the way people transacted, the people when they went out to buy or go to the market or to the store, they used to take their money belts. So that would be inappropriate to take onto Har HaBayit. So it's not the fact that money was inappropriate to bring onto Har HaBayit, but rather the manner in which you bring it onto Har HaBayit is important. So as I said, if you went up there with money in your hands, that would be less of an issue because that's not derech schora. It's not derech schora, that's not a b'gyan, the kedushat makom. So you could have money up there that wasn't Hekdesh. It's just the manner in which the money is brought up to Har HaBayit. Sigmar says, Hochanami, why don't we say in our case here, Kama Kama Azo, the first renters are gone, Vahani Batrahu, and these are the last renters, according to Rashi. Rashi says the Batra here is the renters. So if you read Rashi, it says, Hochanami, he says, Stam Sucher Bayit, a person who is rents a house, Kushu Yotzei, when he leaves, Mechapes Kozem Yotav. He checks all the corners, and you do the final check when you leave in your hotel room, when you leave the rental. Before you move out of a place, person, you know, you scour the whole place, you look for anything that you've left behind, you try to make sure of it, hotel shalom, you'd say. Whatever's there, you take, and it's gone. So now, that means that anybody beforehand that lived there, first of all, when they left, they scoured the place, they took it apart. Number two, someone has left, who's lived there after them, and people who lived there after them, not only did they possibly find it while they lived there, but they also left as well. And since they left as well, they checked again before they left. So we can assume that whatever is found there, right, we can assume was left by the last renter that was there. As well as Antosvos, and then according to Lashitato, believes that the last person who lived there is the Balabayit himself. The Balabayit himself was the last one because the way Tosvos seems to describe it here, that they were talking about rentals here, we're talking about where the Balabayit is also still living in the house, and therefore he's always the Batra. He's always the last one there, because we can assume whoever was socher took whatever they had and left. And therefore, whatever is in the house now must be belong to the Bala Baitu. Alright, so now, the Gemara says, Amarish Lakish Mishum Bar Kapara, Kagon, how do we explain this? Ramsha So Pundak Mishlosha Israel. That the case here is that he made it for a Pundak, he made it for a hotel for Shlosha Israel. Now, the gears, the other possible gears is Bnei Adam. If you make it Bnei Adam, it makes more sense because we're going to ask questions, we're going to have different definitions, we're going to see someone's going to say the same thing as Rish Lakish later on. So you have to say that he's coming to explain Rish Lakish, but if it says Shlosha Bnei Adam, then it makes sense that he's trying to modify or qualify what that means. On the other hand, if he says Shlosha Yisrael, it could also say that he's just explaining that position of Shlosha Yisrael. So what he says is basically we have numerous people that live there, and since numerous people live there, at the same time, or simultaneously, right, then we can believe, or we can assume, that there is Yeush. Why is that? Because if you gave Shlosh Yisrael Levat Achad, Rashi says, and V'chosh Kerem Yuav Dechavim Zum, if they were not Jewish, Umi Shenafal Mimenu Miyayish. Somebody who lost something in that house, or in that location, is Miyayish Menu, because he doesn't know who to make the claim against. He doesn't know to ask if they found it. There's the Maskir, there's two other Sukhim. He has no idea who would have taken it, where it would have been lost. He gives up hope because it's the equivalent of being in a place for Rabbim Mitzvim Shem. It's a place like the Rishut, for him it's the equivalent of Rishut Rabbim because he doesn't know how to direct or how to ask about the object that was left behind. Now, Shmamina, from this you conclude, Halacha k'Rabbi Shimon Elazar Philip Rov Yisrael. Basically what we're saying now is Halacha is, we have Rov Yisrael here, we're talking about three Yisrael plus the Maskir. Right, that's a question mark, whether here the three. Right, you could have asked, was it the three plus the maskir, or two plus the maskir? It's likely that it's three. Tosfos deals with that, but it's likely three plus the maskir. So now you have Rov Yisrael. The people that are found in this house are Yisrael. And we're still passing like Rav Shimon ben Elazar, that it's Harei Yishalov. That he can keep it. Whoever finds it, keeps it, because we assume there was Yehush Balim, because it's a Makom Shabbim Yisroim Sham, and he assumes he's not getting his object back. He assumes because there's so many people here, there's no one to make the claim against. Number two, there's no, right, there are people who may not have the integrity to return it. And he assumes once he's lost it, that there's just no way he's going to get it back. Alright, so now, Gemara says, now, El Arvim Nashia Bar Yaakov, Gon Shasu Pundak Lashlosha of the Kukavim. So in order to avoid that problem of having to pass on the Rav Shimon Elazar Berob Yisrael, we change it now to be a Pundak, right, to be a level where it's three of the Kukavim. So if there's three of the kochavim over there, then we definitely assume if someone lost something in that right location that they're not getting it back. Now Tosfos Rashi points out that doesn't have to be shlosha, it could even be chad. Right. So the assumption is even if it was chad, then we have one person which we know or we assume will not return it. And once you get to that point, then it's yosh already, because if he picked it up, I'm not getting it back. So that's a again the possibility. But now at least we're passing like Rav Shimon Elazar only. Right, by Ovdei Kochavim, which is more palatable. That way, by Ovdei Kochavim, then we're passing like Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Now, Rav Nachman, Abba Rabba, Rav Huna, Filu Teima, Shlosha Yisrael. Even for Shlosha Yisrael. So now either he's coming to modify what Bnei Adam means up before, or he's explaining the position of Rish Lakish of Shlosha Yisrael. My Taima, what it is, how the Nafumine Miyayish? Why is the person who loses the object when the Shlosha Yisrael, why does he give up hope? Meimar Amar, he says, Michte. Right, there was no one else there with me, Elahane, except for these other people who lived there at the same time as me. Amri Kamayu, Kamazimne. A number of times I said in front of them, the Hajuli, return it to me. Hello, Hajuli. And they did not return it. Bahashta the Hajuli. Right, if they were, and now they're going to, also now they're going to show up with it. Meaning that I asked the other Dayarim, the other residents of the house, did they see it? Did they find it? And they all denied finding it. So since they all denied finding it, you only have two possibilities. Either it's not going to be found, it's not there, or number two is, they're planning on keeping it. And if until this now they've denied it, why all of a sudden now are they going to change their mind and say, oh, here, have it back. Right? Say, e, da taula adura. Had they planned on returning it, adura nearly, they would have already returned it. Vahai the lo adura. The fact that they haven't returned it to me now is, but the taula mixale, they're planning on keeping it, they're planning on stealing it. So of course, what? There's Yehush over here. So the Yehush has to do with the fact that I have yet to find my object. I've already queried about the object. I've already asked them about the object. And I haven't gotten a positive response. The fact that I haven't gotten a positive response till now is indicative of the fact that he's going to have Yehush. Because what else? What are his other choices at this point?
It has the guy in Rishus Rabbi, right? What's the case in the Mishnah? The case in the Mishnah?
That's Balabait. The Balabait's there, or, right? Someone in the house. Now, either a new socher, there's a new renter, or the Balabait's in the house, and he finds something else. We say, Heri Yeshalo, right away it's his. Why don't we say, the Gemara wants to know, why don't we say it goes after the Batra? According to the Batra means the Balabait. According to Batra means the last socher. So the Gemara says, no, because the, because...
We're not talking about someone walking through Rishus HaRabin.
No, sticks his hand into the Balabait. No, into the house. It did seem that way. I thought the Mishnah's cryptic. It's ambiguous in the Mishnah. But it's clear from the case, the way they set up the case here, that we're talking about they rented it out to others, right? And that we're talking about the residents of the house, either the current resident or the last resident in the house. Right, so, sorry if I wasn't clear about that. But now we have... So the question now is the current resident or the Balabait who finds the object... What does he do with it? Can he keep it or not? Right. So if there are three Israelim that lived there prior to this point in time, then any individual who lived there is going to have Yehush on it. Because you can assume, I asked about it already, nobody said it was there. So there's no way I'm getting this object back. The fact that I'm not getting this object back is Yehush. If that's the case, then whoever's there now can pick the object up and keep it. Because nobody's looking for it anymore. Nobody has a habit that they're going to get it back. All right. And again, now, if we say that it's afilu tamer shlosha Yisrael, again, then when Rabbanon argue on Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, that's only when it's found in the makom shirabui mitzvim sham. That's at a place where it's just a hefker v'altad and mishut harbim, ploya delahu l'kuhu. There you don't know everybody. So meaning that when you know everybody, there's yeush. Why? Because you can ask all the parties involved and they'll say, we don't have it. So the guy can come to the conclusion that nobody has it. Either nobody found it, it's not going to be found, or they're lying. One of your two things. When you're out in Rishut the Rabbim, Rashi says, you don't know everybody. There's no way you can ask everybody that's present, right, that, did you find it? So there may be that someone has it, and they're looking, or they're going to announce, or they're trying to find the person who's Siman, or whose object it belongs to. Since they don't know everybody, right, there, the Makom Shabim, there they argue with Rabbi Shimon Elazar. So here we'll pass from Rabbi Shimon Elazar, where it's Shlosha Yisrael, because there's a quantifiable number of people which you can ask, right? And since you can take care of all of that, all of those people, and ask, all query all those people, then there's Yehush. Whereas in the Shuta Rabim, where I can't, the Rabbanu will argue under Rabbi Shimon Lazar and say, no, that there is no Yehush Balim. So what we've done now, by saying this, is we've narrowed down the area where we pass them like Rabbi Shimon Lazar, which is more palatable to the Gemara, because that way we're not definitionally saying that Rabbi Shimon Lazar applies to all cases of Rov Yisrael, or all cases of Rov Kenanim. Right, so again, the first case we said was Rov Kenanim, so the Gemara is willing to swallow that versus Rov Yisrael. Now in this case, we went back to Rov Yisrael, the Gemara doesn't want to have a broad psak like Rabbi Shimon Lazar by Rov Yisrael, so where it now narrows down the situation in which we would agree, the Chachamim would admit to Rabbi Shimon Lazar, this is the case, that's a case where it's a limited number of people. Okay, va'az the Rav Nachman the Tameh, the Rav Nachman who now explained our Gemara by Afilu Tema Shlosha Yisrael, Tameh Damar Rav Nachman Vasela Shinafal. Person sees a coin that fell, Mishnayim, two people are walking in front, sees a coin that falls on them, Chayav Lechazir, he has to return it. My time, what's the reasoning? How do Nachum Minei Lo Miyayish, the person who lost it is not Miyayish, Meme Amar, Michtei, Ine Shachrina Lo Ava Badai. There's only the two of us here. Since only two of us here, there's only possibility that one or two of us has it. Since I don't have it, must be the other guy has it. Ella, hi Naktina Le. He says, this guy, the guy picked it up. And he'll say, Antu de Shakalte. Right, that you're the one who took it. Like, I can make a claim, I can tell him, I can look him in the face and say, you took it. Right? Because he can pressure the guy to admit to the fact that it's his. Right? So now let's explain. Mazmachus Rashi and Tosus, what pressure he can place on this individual. Rashi claims that he's going to take him to court and force him to take a Shavuot Hasid. Why? Because he can make a Tanat Bari now. He can make a definitive claim that the only person that could have this object is my partner who was walking with me. There were two people walking, Reuben and Shimon walking through the walking on the street, walking on the road, and one of them lost a coin. Now, we assume the third party was behind them, way behind them, sees a coin that fell after behind them. He can't pick it up and keep it. Why? Because any of those two individuals would not have Yehush. Why wouldn't they have Yehush? Because they thought they were the only two people in the area. So now, if his coin dropped and now they can't find it, he's going to assume, the individual who lost the coin is going to assume that the other person has the coin. All right, so he hasn't answered. He hasn't told me. I asked him now. He didn't tell me the truth. He says, but I can get him to a position where I can force him to tell the truth. What's that position? I'm going to take him to court, and I'm going to have a tanis bari against him. I'll make a definitive claim that he's the only one who was there. He must have picked it up. Take a shvat hasait. Now, the person's not going to be willing to lie under oath. Since he won't lie under oath, I'm going to force him to at least then give it back to me, and I don't have yeush. So the individual will never have yeush in that case because he thinks he's going to get it back. Now, the individual who's behind, who picks it up before there is any yeush. So then Rashi calls that yeush lamidat. Problem is that he picked it up beforehand, and Allah was like Abayis, so he picked it up before there was yeush. That's the way Rashi explains the case here.
I have a few questions on Rashi. First of all, how could he, why is the assumption that he, that the other person found his feet?
Especially since we know he's wrong.
Yeah, first of all, they're walking together. So right. First, I don't understand. I mean, he would see him. Second of all, the fact is not that he could have fallen and someone else picked it up, just like it really happened. That's number one. Second, could you, this is the case that you force someone to watch the set.
Right, so
I can take you into court. I lost something. I can take everyone into court and say,
right, okay, very good. That Yimchavim Tavar, it also says the difficulty in Rashi. Because Rashi makes a lot of assumptions right, that can work over here, like that you're suggesting. One is, can you take him forcing to Shvat Aseh, that he can make a Tanit Bari? That the issue is Yesh Lomidat. All the issues that Rashi is bringing up, those are all not necessarily Mukhrach, mitoch the situation that's at hand. So if you look at Tosvot, Tosvot says, Afilo, we're talking about a case here, Afilo Imbo Siman, that there is no Siman here. It's a coin that falls, right? So there's no Siman. The Enu Mitiyesh Le'olam, that person doesn't give up hope. Now to answer for Rashi, and Tosfos will do the same thing, actually Rashi's behalf, it doesn't have to be that I'm certain I'm going to get it back. I mean, that maybe he didn't, I mean, in the end, maybe he didn't find it. If he didn't find it, but the fact that I still have hope that I'm going to find it means that I don't have Yesh. And since I don't have Yesh, that's enough to cause a problem for the person who finds it. So it doesn't necessarily have to be that in the end that he says this guy definitely.
What I'm saying is you're working there on two people, one of them drops a coin. Okay, let's say you're not sure which one. There's a business of Shabbos Aveda.
I mean, that's you're asking a different question. There is, there may not be any mitzvah to shevet veda because mitzvah to shevet veda has a specific definition, which is when someone does not have yeush, then you must return it. So there's no obligation to it. If nimishur the din,
you saw it fall. The moment you saw it fall, they couldn't have yeush yet.
Yeah, so a couple minutes later, we say that. The assumption is that two guys are walking. And then they start looking, you see them looking for something, they walk on. Then you catch up to the location where they were, and you see there's a coin on the floor now. Right, so now there's probably been Yerush at this point, because so they gave up. They looked around, they gave up hope, and they walked off, so you're going to keep the coin. Why? Umari, Shishnei Bakshua Keachad. They both looked. You saw the two guys in front, they were searching on the ground. Kodem Shabazze Umatza. Before this guy shows up and finds it. The two of them, they dropped, you see them stop, looking around, they're searching all over the floor, and then you see them move on. You get to the location, and you find a coin on the floor. Alright, so now, what do we say? L'kachsabur badai shechaber lakcha. That's why the other guy thinks for sure his friend took it. Why? Kishya baksha yimo, because when he was searching for it, both of them are searching together, the guy who lost it doesn't find it, he assumes the other guy that was with him did find it. Veinu mitjayish la'olam. He never gives up hope. Shemechashiv yachzirenu li kishavishenu birabim. It says, I'll get him in a tight spot. I'll get him in a public venue, and I'll question him, and I'll force him into a position where you have to admit that he was the one who took it. Well, chiyach lo shematzo, and I'll prove to lo shematzo. L'kach, nami yaminim b'samuch, imor shutvein yinu. That's what we see later on. The next case here is that we say they're partners. Kevin shirinim mechapsin yachad. So we see them walking together. So he says, umash perish rashi, mitam yeush lo midat in nira. First of all, the fact that the issue is yeush midat is not an issue. The rova sober, that yeush. First of all, Rava is the one who says it's Yehush, and Rava is the one over here that is Amarava. Amarava here comes and qualifies the statement here. So clear, we're talking about Rava, and Rava believes Yehush and Ledat is a good Yehush. So that can't be the issue, number one. Veins Farlamar, the Adderbe Batar di Totov. Don't say that Rava changed his mind after we asked a good question on him. All of a sudden he changed his mind, now he thinks like a Bayan. Umashi Pirish, Mnami, Shish, Bienu, Shvat, Haset. What do you mean? Kasha, Chiyash, Bienu, Batanat, Safek? Right? What you were asking, David, what? You can show up to anybody in court and say, I think he was the one who took it. So now take a shvata seit. What type of question is that? Umiyo yesh lomar, maybe you could say here, the toin bari. Then he makes a definitive claim. That's what Rashi says. Here, v'shalei yasham acher. There was nobody else in the vicinity. Kim who? Except him. Ach kashed, mimei bar kapara. The Tosfos says the bigger thing is, who instituted shvata seit? Right? The shvata seit was only established in the time of Rav Nachman, might at a much later time. Right, but it was made by Kapara, Dayan Lo Nitzkana Shvat Hasid. There was no Shvat Hasid, so what do you mean you're taking a Shvat Hasid? Over here we're talking about a case of Bar Kapara, and Bar Kapara didn't have a Shvat Hasid, it wasn't in place yet. So how could be that the issue? Menir Lefarish, Shabalo Shvua Inu Mityaish Le'olam. Even without a Shvua, he doesn't give up hope. He doesn't give up hope, because he believes in his heart of hearts that the other guy took it, and that one day, his other guy, he's going to be able to pressure him into admitting to the fact that he took it. Now, to the next case. Bishlosha. This is the case. This is show why it's different than the case. That's what the proof is. Bishlosha eino chayav lachzir. If there are three parties that are walking in front of you, and then again, the coin drops, coin tosses, they look around for it, right? And then they go on, and then you should go up there and you see that there is an object on the floor, you pick it up. Eino chayav lachzir. There is Yeush. Why is there Yeush there? My time, huh? So according to Rashi, the reason is because you can't make a Tanat Barin anymore. You can't make a definitive claim. In order to force a Shvat to say, according to Rashi, you need a Tanat Barin. So in the first case, it's only Reuben and Shimon. So whoever lost the object can make a Tanat Barin that the other guy has it. He knows he doesn't have it. It must be the other guy. You can force a Shvat to say. Now, when you have three people there, then whoever lost it can't make a definitive claim that the other one has it. It's two people that might that are there, and he can't against each individual. He has no Tanat Barin. He says, but one of you two has it. That's not a Tanat Barin, so you can't force a Shvat to say. So according to Rashi, right, the whole idea of a Shvu'ah being the force or the duress under which the other guy is going to admit is not going to exist anymore. Because of that, you're miyayish right away. You give up hope because you're never going to get it back. As opposed to where it's just two parties, you always believe you're going to get the other party because you can force him into a Shvu'ah, and that'll make him admit it, and you get your object back, so you don't have yayish. In this case, where there are two parties, you can't force both of them into a Shvu'ah. Since you can't force both of them into a Shavuah, you don't have that toket, the hammer of the Shavuah, and therefore you give up hope of getting it back right away.
So in the case of it previously, the people sharing a house, if there were only two people living there, that's when you get Dafka 3.
Exactly, yes. All right, my time. Now, Dafka 3, so just to answer your question, Tosus over here at the bottom asks about the three. He says that, Bim Tomar, Vamali Bishlosha, betray Ubalabait Sagi. The way the Gemara is going to read now, why do you actually need three? According to the way Tosfos learns, according to Rashi, it's less of an issue, because Rashi says that it's all about sochrim, it's about renters, and the Baal HaBayit is not relevant here. But according to Tosfos, that the Baal HaBayit is the Batra, and the Baal HaBayit is always in the house, then why don't we say that it's two renters plus the Baal HaBayit, and you get the three that you need, and you're in the same position that you had before. So he says, the Lamanis Lomar goes, Sagi Pachu Mishlosha, Dimar de Mechai Min HaSochrim Avad, Vehim Enum Choshtim Et Baal HaBayit. All the sochrim trust the Baal HaBayit. Because the Baal HaBayit is the maskir, right? They have, they believe him, they trust him, they have a relationship with him. They don't necessarily have a relationship with the other parties that are renting. And so since the relationship is with the Baal HaBayit doesn't count as one of the parties that's pashut here. So therefore you need three plus the Baal HaBayit. That's what Tosfos discussed, which I mentioned before. So right, you do need, the difference would be between three and two. The question is which are the three and which are the two that are there. Now, what is it? My time. How d'nafu minei badai miyayish? Whoever lost the coin or lost an object at this point was miyayish. Mei marmar michte trei habu badai. There were two people with me. Ina kitna lahai armalo shakalte. If I go to one of them, he'll say the other guy took it. Rabina lahai, if I go to the third party, amar lo shakite. They can push each one can push him off with the other guy and say the other guy took it, I didn't take it. So if that's the case, we can't force him into a position of Shavuah. According to Tosfos, on the other hand, the case will be here again, not about Shavuah, but if they all went ahead and they looked around together, when they look around together, and then, again, he can't, at no point in time will he know which of the other two parties to embarrass or to force or to put pressure on in public in order to get his object back. Because of that, he's going to give up hope. So the Yayush, again, the Yayush revolves around his ability to later extract the object from the other party. Where there's only one other party, he says, I have a greater likelihood. I went to Rashi because of Shavuah, I went to Tosfos because I could get him later on, I'll find a way to get him, a proof to him that it's wrong. But because of that greater likelihood, I don't ever give up hope of getting it back. On the other hand, when there is a inability to pressure the other parties to give me the object, because there's multiple parties, so you have multiple parties, I can't ever force the other party to do something because they'll just always push it off. They'll push it off another party. I don't know who to go after. I don't know how to get it back. And I have miyayish. I give up hope at that point in time. Right now, Amar Rava. Rava qualifies. This is, again, why Tosfos says that, again, we're talking about Yesh Lamidaz here because we have Rava. Either Amar, Shlosha, Inu, Chayiv, Lachzir. That which we say that three are not Chayiv, Lachzir. Lo Amran, Ela, Delet, Le, Shava, Pruto, Lachal, Chad, Vachad. Right, that is only when there is not a Shava Pruta L'chol Chad V'chad. About if a Shava Pruta L'chol Chad V'chad, if there's worth a Shava Pruta for each one of them, Chayav L'Achzir, right? Then he has to return it. My time, what I'm going to say, Imar Shutvei Ninu, that they are Shutafim, V'lo Miyashu, and they don't give up hope. So now, what we said before is that there are three parties over here. If there are three parties over here, then the problem for the individual who lost it is that he has two claimants that he has to go after. If they are Shutafim over here, what's the Shutfutu? The Shuvut narrows it down to become two parties again. If you say, I have, right, and the other party, right, exactly. The Shuvut now become one entity. If they're one entity, then there's really only two parties here.
Or the other possibility is that all three of them are shutafim. They're a single unit, and they trust each other. And each individual lost it thinks that the other guy is hiding it from him, holding it up to cause him a little duress, but or distress, and he'll give it back in the end. Because of that, there is no yeush over here. So we'll see in a couple minutes that Tosfos actually favors this explanation of all three of them being a single shutafut rather than two against one.
All right, so the Gemara is going to say that the Gemara actually Rav is going to, there's Nikadami and Rav that is actually going to say what you're saying now. But okay, at this point in the Gemara says no, that you need three putot. We'll see why. So Rashi says, which explains the case here. So over here, when you have less than three putot, right, miman of shach, right, we can say that there is yours, yeush. There is yeush here, because one of the possibilities, if there is no shutafut here, then we're left with the original case, which is you have three parties, and he can't make a directed claim against anyone. If there is shutafut here, the shutafut, each individual owns less than a shavipruta in this object. If there's less than a shavipruta, there's no din of a shavas aveda when it comes to less than a shavipruta. On the other hand, if there is three prutot, three whole prutot over here, now it steps right into a problem. Because, again, if there are three individuals, then you have the same issues you have before. But there's a possibility that there's shutafim over here. If they are shutafim over here, then there's enough money for each of them to get a pruta. There's enough money for each of them to get a pruta. That means you're chayav in a shavas aveda. And number two is,
there's only one, or
there are only two parties now, because the shutafut becomes a single entity. And if you have two parties, then it'll be like the first case of chayav dachzir. Now, Ikadam, right? There are those that say, Amar Rava, Afgav Leipa Yelishava Shtei Prutot Chayav Lachzir. Let's say this is your question, right? Even if there are only two Prutot to Chayav Lachzir, my time, Imor Shutri Ninhu, V'chad Manayu Achule Achle Mante Legabe Chavrei. Let's say they are a Shutafim, right? And one of them was Mochel, meaning that one coin belongs to one party, and the other coin, the other Prutot, belongs to the two Shutafim. And one of the two shutafim was mochel his ownership in that coin to the other one of his shutafim. So now you'll have a din of a shavas aveda because there's a prutah's worth on each side of the parties here. So now you don't have the case that we had before. Even with two prutot, you have both possibilities. If they are not shutafim, then right. If they are not shutafim, then maybe right you would not have to return it because then one of them will claim it as yosh. But on the other hand, if they are shutafim, over here, there is an obligation to return it. Why is there an obligation to return it? Because there's a possibility that now there are only two parties, and each party owns a pruta's worth. Meaning that there's the singleton who owns a party, and there's the shutafim who own a pruta as well, but that pruta, if it was shared between them, then you wouldn't have an obligation to return it. But on the other hand, it could be that one of them was mochel and says, you keep this pruta from our partnership, and therefore there is a whole pruta that is owed to a single individual. That's the case of a shavas aveda. I mean, the shutafut themselves only requires
one
shutafut. Right. It's a partnership. It's see-through. And that's what the Gemara is even true in the law today.
Right,
the partnership.
Entity,
right. As opposed to a corporation, which is an independent entity, which is a single entity, by a partnership, we don't say there's an entity independent of the individual. The partnership itself is see-through to the individuals, and there's no entity that exists besides the individuals.
Is that true historically? There was no such thing as...
I don't know. That's a modern invention, that the corporation is an independent entity. The corporation is independent of the individuals, that we look at that as being protective of the individuals underlying the corporation, that you can have a entity that is not the individuals belonging to the individuals.
Benekabayis was a collective, right?
Yeah, but there it's because it's hekdesh. No, the issue there is not that it's a corporation. The protection is that it doesn't belong to anybody. It's Benekabayis, it belongs to Hashem, belongs to Kodesh. There is no owner over it. So Bet HaGabayit, it has no owners.
Well, you have land that goes to the Kohanim. You think it goes to the Mishmar?
It goes to Hashem, and then Hashem, it's distributed to the Mishmar. There's no... definitely, the corporation, this whole idea that a corporation is a separate entity from protecting and the corporate veil, all of that is a modern phenomenon, that corporations are independent entities. I mean, I'll tell you, it's such a modern concept that halachically became a huge issue. For instance, owning stocks in companies that own Chameit, right, only stocks and companies that traffic in the veilot. All these things, right? How do you look at that corporation? I mean, in the past, you never had that. You purchased something, you owned something, it was owned by the owner. Now, all of a sudden, you have this possibility where you can own something that is not owned by an owner, right? That's a new phenomenon, which is in the modern day shutim has come up, not something that was addressed, you know, in the Middle Ages. All right.
I have a question on this last thing. Is it? I mean, how could anybody assume that one of the partners is going to be mochel on his because it's less than a shevapruta? Is that the reason why, if there's two, right? Rava says if there's two, then we assume that one of them is mochel.
On the ikadam, right, right.
Why? Is it because
it's less because than there is, right, I guess we have to assume that. Because it's only a pruta.
Well, it's only a shevapruta. It's very likely that at least one of the partners is
just mochel. Just said mochel, the other guy. He says, Vim Tomar. Tosfos says that the second Tosfos says that Nim Tomar Necha Shema Shnayim Hem Shutvin. Two of them are partners. The Ein Choshtin Zel Zeh. They don't worry about each other. Lo Mityash Shneim Mitanu B'Tanet Bari L'Shlishit. They can make a Tanet Bari on the third party. So when they're approaching the third party, they trust that they can make a Tanet Bari. So he says Beishlam Artavada Kilekal L'Shnayim Hayachad Yiton Bari L'Chaviru. When there are only two parties involved, then you'll make a Bari claim. Beishlo Shah Lo Yitanu Tanet Bari L'Shlishit. They'll never make a Tanet Bari L'Shlishit. Afilu Yu Shnayim Mehem Shutvin. If they're both partners, maybe they don't chosheh each other. He thinks that his partner took it in order to cause him a little bit of pain. He said, so Tosos, right, was the other way, which is what you asked before. Why don't you say that they're all shlosha shutvim? That they're all three are shutvim. Right. So Tosos says that the likelihood is that they're all shlusha. That's another possibility. And Tosos that there are only three shutvim here. You will never have it where it's two and one. You always have it that it's all three shutvim. If they're all three shutvim, then right, then you don't have a... Right, no, I don't know. He says the likely scenario that if three people walking together, that they're all parties. You won't have two of them be shutvim and the other party be an independent party. So that's it, like less. Either they're three individuals or they're all...
You know, the possibilities are infinite. Right. But there's only a couple of likely scenarios.
Right.
I guess what I'm saying is I don't understand why any of those are actually likely scenarios. They're all possibilities, but I don't see why any of them are likely scenarios.
Right. Okay. All right. Ra'a selah shenafla. This person sees the selah falls. Natla lifnei yeyush. You pick it up before there's yeyush. A manat the gozla, but he picked up before Yeyush on an intention to steal it over Bukulan. You violate three Yusurim. What are they? Mishum lo tigzol, because of stealing. Mishum hashev tashivim. You've also now violated the Isur to return the object. Mishum lo tochal italim. And also the restriction against, right, lo tochal italim, that you're not allowed to walk by and ignore the fact that there's an object there that you need to return. Va'afal gav de chazra. And even if he returns it later on, after there is Yeush, Matanahu di Ahivle, you are not rectifying the Surim that you did before. It's not classified as a Shel Zaveda, but rather you are just giving him a gift, the Surah the Avod Avod, and the Surah that you violated is done. So once you picked it up for Gizel, you can now, once there's Achar Yeush, you cannot return it.
But as it is in Tabar and Rabbah, there's no Surah?
In terms of. He's obligated. It's before Yeush.
But it's before Yeush.
And only when there's Yeush later. Here he picked up and he wanted to steal it right away. So there's nothing to talk about.
He's over on the Isra'aseh.
Isra'aseh, right. It has to be. Right. The Shem Shevim is Isra'aseh, Lo Tuchadim, Lo Tuchzor are Labin. Right, whatever the circumstance is, that it's Lifnei Yeush, and that's when he stole it. Right now, Matanu Devlevi Surdavavavi. Not only Lifnei Yeush. He picked it up, intending to do a Shavu Sevedah. Ula Achar Yeush, after the Balim of Yeush, Nitkaben L'Gozla. Then he tends to steal it. Over Mishum Hashev Tashiveh. Then you've only violated the Isur of Hashev Tashiveh. Because when you picked it up, you then are no longer in violation of Lo Tuchal Italim. That's number one. Number two is, what you have to do once you pick it up is return it. When you don't return it now, you're violating the Aseh of Hashev Tashiveh. What about Lo Tigzol? Well, now it's after Yeush Lo Tigzol. So Rashi says, and Tosfos disagree about why it's not Lo Tigzol over here. Rashi says the reason it's not Lo Tigzol over here because Gzela is only defined as something when you grab something away from someone else, from hand to hand, when you grab it away from them. Lo Tigzol over here is already, it's in your possession. Since it's already in your possession, it came to your possession in a mutar fashion, in a sense. That's not classified as Lo Tigzol. So Rashi says that's why there's no Lo Tigzol over here. He says, Lo tigzol lo shayach al b'shat netila. That's what Rashi says. When you pick it up, that's the only time you can have gzela, because that means you picked it up inappropriately. But over here, since you already picked it up to do the right thing, and later on then you're kovesh, Tosfos disagrees with that. He says, wait a minute. Lo tigzol applies even if you're kovesh skar sechir. If you withhold a payment or wages from an individual, you're considered a gazlan. That's under the category of gazlan. So we see that even later on, when you withhold an object, that's also classified as gazelah. So after you say the problem here is that it's done later on. So it says the reason it's not classified as low tigzol over here is, atam it's gabin l'gzol, no nityashu abalim, bachar kvar nityashu. So the difference between wages of an individual versus the case here, is the case of wages, there's no yeush. So when you're gozelet, it's still considered gazelah because you're kovesh skar sachir at the time that the balim still want their money back. Over here, we said that the kvisha, the withholding of the object, happens after yeush. It happens after yeush, then it's not in the category of lo tigzol anymore. Himtim la archi nashua balim, if he waits until the balim give up hope, he doesn't pick it up. He says, well, let me wait till I have yeush. But not la, and then he picks it up. Now, of course, once there's yeush, there's no gzeila, there's no hashev tashivim, there's no obligation to return it, but in the interim, he violated lo tuchal italim, which is that you're not allowed to leave an object which you know you can return to somebody else because, right, it was before yeush. So he waits. What he basically does is he avoids having the problem of having to return it by standing back and waiting until there's yeush. But once he knows there's yeush, he goes and takes it, then when beforehand he knew about the object, and he knew that they didn't have yeush. That means there was an obligation for him not to pass by and look to the side and say, I didn't see this object. Alright, now, Tosfos asks on the first case, where we said that you violated all three Yisurim, isn't Geneva in general, or Lotivzol, a Nitak Le'aseh? Isn't it a Lava Nitak Le'aseh, which is when you steal something, when has the Geneva, what's the obligation? Hashev, the Shivim, you have to return it, right? Hashev, the Gzelah, Hashev, Gazal, you have to return it. So why in the end, when the Gemara says over here, when you give it back to him after Yeush, Matano Ba'amahu, it's a gift. What do you mean it's a gift? I mean, you still have an obligation, if you stole an object, you have an obligation to give it back. So why is it classified as a gift? Why don't we say over there, he rectified the Gzelah?
We say the Yeush, doesn't that separate?
No, even with Yeush, you have to give it. Yeush allows you to keep the object and return the money. You still have to return the money. I mean, that Shinoi or Shinoi with Yeush allows you to keep the object. Although over here it came to him before Yeush, so it won't matter because it came to him before he was Yeush.
So once he has Yeush, then the Mefreh doesn't
undo the Gzela.
Well, it says Vesur Davarabba, which is there.
Very good.
So those who know this Elaine, clearly he missed that one.
Right. So that's what Tosus says in the end. Right. So if you look at Tosus, Matar Ma'am, we're talking about Lo Lav, Lo Tigzol, Mikrein Nitaklase. It says, Imkain, Kevin Delain Yang Gzela, Mikrein Matana, Gama Shivim Tishvim, Lama Lo Tikain. If it's already good enough to give it back for Gzeilah, then it should be good enough that he's returned the object for Shavas Aveda. But Yesh Lomar Lokaya Alalav Lo Tukhali Talim, like Shaul just suggested, Shabbat Shalom Yixir, Kodam Yeush. That's it. I mean, that when the Gemara says Yisur Avad, even when you return it, means that doesn't help you rectify Lo Tukhali Talim. It does, according to Tosus, rectify Lo Tukhzol and rectify Shavas Aveda, which is pretty amazing. Tosus says, Migo, that it works for Gzeilah, it also works for the Shavas Aveda. I think you could probably argue that point as well. But at least for Lo Tigzol, he says that will rectify the situation in terms of Lo Tigzol when you return it. All right, now, finish up the Gemara. Amar Rava, Hai man techazi denafel zuzi mechavrei beit chalata. Person who sees a coin fall from his friend out on the sand dunes on the beach. Rashbchei, he finds it, b'shakla, he takes it, lo mechavrei l'aduri, they don't have to return it to him. Mai kaima, how denafel mel miyayishu. The guy who lost it for sure gave up hope of ever getting it back, because when a coin falls in the sand, the likelihood that you're going to find that coin is near nil. Babakov the Chazid IT Arbalo of a Kamarabel, even though you come see him come back with a sifter and sift through the sand looking for this coin or this object, you don't have to give it back to him. Why? Meima Amar, Kiyeka the Nofo Minai Didi Achanami the Nofo Mini Shakrina. Because the guy who comes back to sift it says, not that I'm gonna find my object, but he said, just like I lost something here, someone else lost something over here. So I'm going to go sift, and hopefully I'll find something that's the equivalent of something good. I know, look, I never would have thought people lose things here, but I just did, so maybe other people lose things here. Mishkachna midin, I'll find something that's equivalent value. Not because he thinks he's going to find the exact object, but probably because maybe I'll find something else that's over here. So you don't have to assume that he's coming back to get his particular object, but he had yeush and his object, maybe I'll find something else. All right, Mishnah. Matzah b'chanut, areyo shalo. If we find it in the store, they are his. On the other hand, if it's between the counter and the shopkeeper, then it belongs to the shopkeeper, because why would the money fall on that side of the counter that's with the owner? It's likely that it's his. On the other side of the counter, it's probably somebody who was in the store, and there's yosh, because Rabbi Mitzuyim is from. Lifnei shulchani, by a money changer, are yosh shalom. If you find money that's in front of the table of the money changer, then there's nothing to talk about. Again, it's from the people who came to change money, they dropped something, and there's nothing to talk about. Right? Ben Kisei the Shulchani, if it's time between the Kisei and the Shulchani, Kisei here is the chair on which they put the table. They lay out the table on top of a chair, which is where they change the money. So from him, again, that would be equivalent to the counter in the store and the owner. Ariyosho Shulchani, that belongs to the money changer. Well, otherwise, what's the point doing over there? Someone who buys fruits from his friend, or his friend sends him fruits, and he finds in them money, he can keep them. And then if they were tied up, he has to take them and be machwiz. Amar says, even if they're on the table itself, meaning by the shulchan, even if the money's on the table itself, right, then you can keep them. Our mission says, lifnei shulchani harei shelo. If it's in front of the shulchani, then it's yours. I mean, in front of the, it sounds like in front of the table. Hal gabi shulchan, the shulchani, right? If it sounds like, but if it was on the shulchani, then it belongs to the shulchani. Ema seifa, what do you do the second half of our Mishnah? Ben akisei the shulchani, only if it's between the table and the shulchani, shel shulchani, then it belongs to the, right, the money changer. Hal gabi shulchan, shelo. Right? If it's on the shulchan, then it sounds like it's for yours. You can keep it. Ela mahal leka lamashmina. Our Mishnah is not Meduyak in either direction, because our mission only deals with between the money changer at the table and the table and the buyers, but it doesn't deal with the table itself. It's not clear from our mission. Rabbi Lazar ha manale. Where does he know this from? How did he conclude this? Amarava masnisin kashite. Our mission was difficult for him. My area the tani ben kisei the shulchani. Why does the mission say between the kisei and the shulchani? Right, so shulchani that belongs to the money changer. Litnei al shulchan. Right, why don't we just say on the money changing table itself, that belongs to the shulchan?
So had you said ala shulchan, that would have indicated to me that it belongs to the shulchani when it's ala shulchan. But the fact that you only use the term of ben kisei la shulchani shows me that what's on the shulchan does not belong to the shulchani. So you'll say to me, all right, ben kisei la shulchani is the same term, or to be parallel with the ratio of the Mishnah, which says ben ateva lachen vani. So just like in the ratio where it used ben ateva lachen vani, also we used over here ben kisei la shulchani. If that's the case, inami matzab shulchanot tekidiktani ratio, then you should have used the term shulchanot like it does in the Reisha. Why in the Reisha it says Matzaba Chanuto, you find it in the store Shalot, then it's yours. So also over here, instead of saying that you find it Lifnei HaShulchani, that is Harielu Shalot, that when you find it in front of the Shulchani it's yours, it should have said Matzaba Shulchanot. When you find it in the money changer's area, when you find it in the money changer's store, that is when you can keep it. But the fact that it wrote Lifnei HaShulchan is coming to teach me something else. Right? What? El Shvamina. The fact that it says Lifnei HaShulchan is Afilu Menachim Agavi HaShulchan. Even that which is found on the Shulchan itself, Harei Shalot, those are his. So if you want to argue that you need parallel structure here, you should have parallel structure across the board. Parallel structure would have indicated that the case where you keep it is Matzah B'Shulchanot, and the case where the Shulchani keeps it is when it's Ben Kisei L'Shulchani. But the fact that that is not the case, the Mishnah wrote Ben Kisei L'Shulchani belongs to Shulchani, and then Lifnei HaShulchani, in front of the Shulchani, belongs to you. In front of the Shulchani will include the table itself. Including the table itself means that whatever's on the table also belongs. What you find on the table belongs to you as well. And he was Mendaik also from the Seifa now, that the Seifa says Ben Kisei L'Shulchani, between the seat and the Shulchani, belongs to the Shulchani. Since it belongs to the Shulchani, that means that what's on the Shulchan itself does not belong to the Shulchan, otherwise it should have written it. And therefore, we concluded, or Rabbi Lozer concluded, that which is found on the Shulchan itself belongs to the person who finds it. Okay, we'll stop over here.